This is the Own It Show, where we tell stories of how everyday people made ownership theirs to create extraordinary success.
Welcome back to the Own It Show. I'm Justin.
And I'm Elise. Welcome to the show.
And guys, I know we've often talked about how do we navigate through this space with everything going on in our minds. And if you're like me at 33 years old, and you know Alzheimer's is setting in quick, it's easy to forget a lot of things along the way. Or how do we make sure that we can remember all of our routines that we're trying to put into place? We're trying to eat better. We're trying to exercise. We're trying to biohack, quote unquote. You know how much I hate that word, but our way through life to be able to optimize our body, our mind, our soul, and our spirit. And so what we sought out to do was get the guy who is helping our brains move in the right direction, get them back working in the best possible way so that we can function at the highest levels in which we can possibly operate at. And so without further ado, the guy needs no introduction whatsoever. He's had over, I think, 2,500 media appearances on places like Dr. Oz, Good Morning America, The Morning Show. But today he's spending time with us on The Own It Show. So Dave Farrow, thank you so much for being here with us today. And I can't wait to pick your brain. Pardon the pun.
I love it. I love it. I do think, though, that at 33, you got a little ways to go before you're worried about Alzheimer's, though. I think there's a few people who cringe at that going, oh, no, if he has to worry, what do I got to worry about? Right.
Totally. I'm so interested. How did you get into this whole brain space? And what is the story behind it that really kind of motivated you to dive deeper into it and learn and become this expert that can now speak to different ways to optimize your brain health and the way in which you have memory and recall and everything else that kind of comes with that?
Well, sure. I mean, like a lot of your audience may know this already, but my big claim to fame is I'm in the Guinness Book of Records twice for my memory. So I got the certificates right above me. You know, ever since they asked Obama for his long form birth certificate, I always keep these things behind me just in case you get some skeptics out there. I'm just joking. I love them guys. But the thing is, what you don't realize is before I got in the Guinness Book of World Records, I was actually diagnosed with ADHD and dyslexia. And I really struggled. This was, I'm a few years older than you. So this was kind of in the early days of ADHD and, you know, the medication and planning wasn't really that good. The way that educators treat it was really what we would call, you know, kind of naive or, you know, misunderstanding the condition. And essentially, I felt like right away that I was on my own. And a lot of people, teachers included, but a lot of people, even relatives, took a diagnosis, as, and in my case, ADHD and dyslexia, but of course you can fit in a lot of different labels out there. They took that as just a sign that, you know, you can't expect much out of that person, you know? And they just basically, it felt like they gave up on me before I even got started. So I went on a quest to figure out everything I could about how my brain worked. I was a really big fan of martial arts. So I thought if I could train my brain to do like memory stuff the same way I did martial arts, then you know, I'd have an advantage. And every teacher I said that to thought I was crazy and like, oh, you're so naive and you don't know anything. And it turns out I was right and they were wrong. This was before the theory of brain plasticity was popular. And this was just on the heels of when we, and this is actually not too long ago, science believed that the brain was hardwired. The idea was that we know that our nerve cells don't do what's called mitosis, which means they don't divide. And as a result, everybody thought that the brain was static. You know, you might even remember this when you were a kid, you know, things like public service announcements about don't do drugs and stuff like that, like in the clinic era and slightly after that, the early Bush era, all of them were focused around saying, you know, the science says you get a certain number of brain cells and then, you know, you're just slowly losing them as you get older. You're never going to get new ones. And that was really the belief. And that led to a lot of really bad policy, but not only that, it was bad science. As we know now, the brain does change itself. It changes itself all the time, every day, whether we like it or not. And the question is really, what kind of brain do we want to have? That's the better question to ask. I learned everything I could about brain hacking. I know you don't like biohacking. I hope you like the term brain hacking better. And I also learned all about, you know, even things like mentalism. One of my best friends actually is a professional magician, and he, you know, opened the vault and showed me all these great mentalists down through history that have done amazing mental feats on stage. And they weren't just tricks. They really did have a different way of thinking about memory. And it dated back to ancient Greece. And so I started working on that, training my memory. And then I started coming up with new techniques and new strategies. And then I realized I had something no one else did. So I went for the Guinness Book of Records, which let me tell you, I almost immediately regretted. It was the toughest thing you could possibly imagine. I had a headache for a week. But with the right strategy, you can do just about anything. And now I travel around the world. I speak to people, audiences, you know, especially the ones I love, or anybody with ADHD who there's a kind of shared, I want to say like a shared low self-esteem amongst ADHD and dyslexic people, that they just don't think they're as good as other people. And when they see what I've done, I try to show them that that disadvantage can actually be an advantage. And I hope that other people get that message too.
It's really inspirational the way you speak. I connect with you on that level because I have issues along ADHD, and also don't ask me to read out loud. And so I connect with you on a really high level there. I want to talk about the biohacking piece and why I don't like it, and why I actually like the mentalism piece of it. Because when we talk about biohacking, it's so often like, how can we shortcut our way to get results? How can we do the top of the pyramid things that are sexy and fun, but rather let's skip out on just the things that are beautiful world and nature and systematically, foundationally, we should have in our objective world. And we'll just leave those out. But because we're biohacking, we're doing something right for our body. And so
I see what you mean. So you're talking about like, how can we have a good looking body for the beach, but we're not focused on health, or you have a lot of muscle, but you don't have a lot of strength. You ever see these like strong men that are able to, you know, bend great things, and they're not, you know, they don't look like bodybuilders? Yeah, no, I get what you're saying. Yeah, it's real health and real vitality.
Completely. And but because you're in a red light exposure in a sauna every morning, you're nailing it. And so that's my big qualm there. But even going a step further, I would love to kind of understand how you, or one, what your record was that you broke, and then two, was the systems and strategies that you picked up along the way that you were able to take and use the science of neuroplasticity and the mitosis that goes on within the brain, and the new science that's come out since the early to mid 2000s that's now completely changed the game.
Yeah.
When it comes to the way we think, the way we process information, and the way we can truly change our brain for high-end performance.
And I would actually even add to that, it changed how we interact with other people even. A lot of people don't remember that. And I wrote it in a book that's coming out next year, that like a lot of the you know, a lot of the criminal justice laws were created around the idea of brain plasticity. Once that idea came into focus, so many people use it as an excuse to say, okay, that means people don't change. And they took all the funding away from rehabilitation, addiction, all these different places. Have you heard of those things shutting down around that time? Put it all into things like the three strikes rule and put it into the prisons. And now America has a larger prison population per capita than even China and anywhere else in the world. And we've really done a disservice to the minority communities because of that, you know? And that's a legacy that we're gonna have to look at, that we have to always, and the reason I'm bringing it up, I don't want to bring anybody down here, but I want to, and I will show all the tricks and hacks and everything, but I just want to say that there is a huge consequence when we give up on the idea of change, when we give up on the idea of upward momentum, growth. And just think of, just think of it like with kids, you know, if you had a kid that was struggling with something, would you ever just tell them, oh, you might as well give up now? But we tell ourselves that so many times, you know, we give up on ourselves so much. So yeah, my big mission here is to tell people that life is there to be lived on purpose, to go for it instead of just react to everything around you. And yes, your brain, your essence, everything everything you think that you are is in this gray matter here, your identity, your beliefs. And the really interesting thing is when you look into it deeper and deeper, you can actually hack a lot of that. The biggest ones obviously are memory. By understanding how the brain thinks about information, you can trick your brain into remembering something long-term. By understanding how you absorb information, you can speed read, things like that. But all of these things start with the fundamental belief that you don't necessarily have to end where you began. You know, if anybody here is struggling with something, you know, with a subject in school or something, you can find a way, find a solution to, you know, handle that subject, to become good at that. You just have to find the right solution for you.
Yeah, and of course you did that for yourself. And it's so impressive. Not only did you do that, proving everybody wrong, but you are now a 2-time Guinness World Record.
Oh my God, proving everybody wrong. I had relatives bet money that I would fail at my first Guinness record. Okay.
Wow.
Yeah. I won $40 and I'm still waiting for them to give it to me. You know, it's crazy, but and I apologize for jumping over you, but yeah, you hit something really nail on the head there. There's that crab bucket effect, where when you're trying to reach for something higher, there's all the others in the crab bucket. They're going to try to pull you down. And it's a real phenomenon amongst crabs in a crab trap. That's the irony, is that if there's only one crab in a trap, sometimes they can get out. But if there's one already in there, then they'll actually prevent the next person from leaving. It's absolutely fascinating. And we do it as human beings. But I want to give you guys a hack. You want to hear some simple hacks?
Yeah, tell us.
Love it.
All right. So this is in the course, Pharaoh Memory. It's at pharaohmemory.com. I can actually just put that in the chat. You'll probably have a post on there. One of the first things that I realized is that I was blanking out on tests, and it was anxiety related. I didn't call it anxiety in those days. It was more just like stress. But what happens when you feel stress, especially when you're trying to think, is your brain, first of all, it's flooded with epinephrine, adrenaline. Once that wears off, it's flooded with cortisol. Both of these things actually directly interfere with your ability to form new memories and to recall these memories. Now, the reason for that makes sense from an evolutionary perspective. If you're super stressed, your brain thinks that you're going to like have to run away from a tiger or something like that. You're in a fight or flight situation, and you don't need calculus when you're running away from a tiger. Like, that's basically the point. Your brain gets rid of all the really smart parts of it. It takes all the energy and blood away from that when you get stressed. So I wish every student was taught how to get rid of stress. It's absolutely powerful. So here's one little trick that can help you. There's actually a couple of things I'll give you. So the first one is belly breathing. We've heard of this in meditation, but a lot of people don't understand the neuroscience behind it. So, you know, when you breathe through your chest, you're like hyperventilating. If you put my hand up here, like, you know, your chest is heaving up and down. As it turns out, that is breathing through your chest, with your chest going up and down, is telling your brain that there's something to stress out about. And the reason for that is when you're in fight or flight, that's the quickest way to get oxygen. And that's actually why you react when you're surprised. You react by taking a lot of air in and you move your elbows out. You ever notice when people do this, you go, right? They're like scared and they go, what am I doing, right? I'm taking in all this oxygen. I'm even moving my elbows out of the way so my rib cage can expand, taking all the oxygen I can so I can either, you know, run away or fight. That's the fight or flight response. And immediately when you're starting to breathe through your chest, your higher brain functions are not at their peak. Even if you do this just a little bit, it's not at its peak. What I suggest is actually practice breathing through your stomach. That's where your stomach goes in and out like a balloon. So many people want to look like they have perfect abs and everything. They don't want to do this. They hold their stomach in and then they make their chest go up and down. And they don't realize that they're actually stressing themselves out just a little bit. They've got kind of a low level anxiety because of their physiology. I figured you guys, as the body people, you know what I'm talking about here.
Yeah.
And if you just stop and let your stomach go in and out like a balloon, that's how babies breathe. It actually is, it uses a different nervous system that essentially creates the relaxation response. It tells your brain to relax, that there's no danger. And like that one thing improved my test scores when I was a kid. It was absolutely fantastic. It's such a simple concept.
It's such a great tactic. And it's something that we use all the time in our coaching business to help people come back to that parasympathetic state. One of the things that I find myself being really curious about when it comes to you, Dave, is you overcame this really difficult point in your life, and actually at quite a young age, right? Your teachers were telling you you couldn't do this thing.
Yeah, I was like 14, yeah.
Yeah, and how did this experience help you realize what your purpose and your passion is and help you share that with the world today?
That's actually a really good one. I actually have a brain hack for that. This is another part of the course. It's more normally like an advanced thing, but we do a lot of visualization in memory techniques. So when you visualize things, I could get you guys to visualize like a list of objects in a way you'd never forget it, that sort of thing. But a lot of people don't realize visualization can be used to make better decisions. And this is a brain hack that I developed years ago. But this is going to answer your question. I was sitting in the principal's office. I remember it. It was looking at the sheet of my diagnosis of like all the different things that they said. And at the time, I also suffered from chronic pain as well. So it was like one thing after another, after another. And what I did was I visualized my future, and I visualized basically, okay, how am I going to respond to this moment right here? You know, am I going to fall? I felt like they were streaming me in the wrong direction. Essentially, they were putting me in classes that I found very boring. They weren't stimulating. A lot of people now know that ADD kids, you don't lower the expectations. You actually raise them to challenge them, because that'll actually wake their brain up and they like a challenge. So I felt like they were doing things wrong. So I thought to myself, okay, I'm kind of seeing two different paths. And I saw the path of, and essentially this is the visualization exercise, visualize and create the future of everything that you think that happens if you make this one decision. And the decision was, am I going to defy this and kind of go on my own, or I'm going to follow all of the experts' advice and do it their way? And I looked at the one where I follow their advice, and I was really, really negative. I basically, the visualization told me that I was just basically, essentially kind of blaming the world for all my problems. And I was really whiny and nobody blamed me for it, but I always had an excuse. But I really, essentially that person, when I saw them, when I was able to visualize it clearly, I didn't like who they were. And that's what made me decide, hey, I don't know where this other path leads, but I like it better than that person I'm going to be. So, you know, it's actually a great brain hack to use visualization to create a clear mental image of where you think your life will be if you make decision A or decision B. And that strategy has helped me tremendously at different times when I was struggling.
I love what you were talking about even in that previous hack, because we talk a lot to our audience about diaphragmatic breathing. And a lot of people in normal day culture now know it as Wim Hof breathing or meditative breathing. But it's simply taking, I mean, a lot of people don't realize this, but your diaphragm actually has, the diaphragm muscle actually has some of the highest level of neuron innervations between your gut and brain capacity. And so when you have this, it all of a sudden changes the way in which you feel. And we also talk about RPR, which is reflexive performance reset, changing the way your neurons ultimately fire. And by simply touching different parts of your body, the diaphragm specifically changes your breathing, changes your state of being, which goes back to the science that you just talked about, which changes the way you think and ultimately can perform. So I'm fascinated by these.
We're like two different experts, so we still came to the same river through two different paths. Yeah,
totally. I'm just fascinated by the reason why, because I always want to know why. And it goes back to my first comment of why I hate biohacking, because people are just like, oh, I'm just going to do this. Well, why are you doing this? Does it work for you or does it not work for you based off everything else? And so I'm curious to the underlying target area as to why you chose to operate within this level within the brain, and what's foundational to every brain hack that you've pretty much put into play?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know, it reminds me of partially what Elise said earlier, you know, how much we were talking about visualization and how that really plays a role. But the thing is that I think there's this, like, we're using the same mechanism, but we either are describing it slightly differently, which is cool, and also applying it differently. So the way I would teach it is that when you visualize something, it's not necessarily the same as meditation. Just like diaphragm breathing, you don't have to be in a meditative state. A lot of people make it bigger than it has to be. I usually tell people that visualization works on some level your brain thinks it's actually happening. You know, if you think, and I, you know, try to give a real life example that everyone can relate to. So if you think of a movie and the, you know, there's high paid actors up on the screen, but you can still cry or laugh or, you know, like get involved in the movie. And you can do that because there's a certain part of your brain who thinks it's real. You know, logically it's not, but part of your brain does think it's real. Now you can use that principle to do everything from trick your brain into memorizing thousands of digits of information all the way to making better decisions or setting goals or bring those goals to you. But that's kind of the way I described it. I try to tell people to, you know, not get it confused necessarily with meditation. I think a lot of people are intimidated by meditation or the idea that they have to sit down and they have to be perfect at it and clear the mind of all their thoughts and everything. This is literally something you can do in just seconds. As long as you can picture it for a short time, you can remember it and you can, you know, you can make that work.
Who is the target client that you usually hit, or what are people usually suffering from in their day-to-day lives that by using a lot of your techniques, your modalities, your strategies are like, wow, this is life-changing for me?
Sure. Well, I mean, I've got a couple different markets, I guess. And just so like the audience knows, they may not have heard about me, but my memory course at one time was the best-selling course in the world of its kind. We sold well over 100,000 copies worldwide. I had an infomercial and everything. And then like, you know, this was like in the early 2000s. And the different markets, like the one of the biggest ones, there was, of course, people who were in their 40s to 50s. They're worried about their memory. They want to train their brain. Those people also wanted to use brain enhancement techniques on the job. When you can walk into a room and remember, you know, if you're in sales and you remember everything about a product, or you can remember everybody's name and their birth date at the, you know, in the office, then you become the most popular person. So there's people who used it to get ahead financially. And I'd say also an equal number of that is there's a very interesting thing that happens, especially in America, where you have students that are graduating out of high school and they've done really well in high school in a number of subjects. And that's because they've got some sort of strategy or they put in a lot of effort. And the ones who are especially at risk for dropping out are the ones who they're the first generation to go to college. So they don't have parents that can kind of guide them. Hey, this is what to expect and everything. And the workload tends to surprise a lot of people. So that alone, I believe, is one of the main reasons why we have essentially a 50% dropout rate. Now, they're not all dropping out. Sometimes they lower down their classes, but you know, you can look in the stats. The average four-year college in America, 50% who sign up for that four-year college do not graduate for one reason or another. And the biggest reason has been curriculum. There's just too much stuff to learn in too short a time. And that's why the colleges bring me in. They bring me in to speak, in exam week and cram week and things like that, to show them the study skills to get it in their head in a very efficient and effective way. So that's the other, you know, major market. And that's what we tried to put online at pharomemory.com. And I'd say the third thing is really my business clients. As you know, I have the marketing company, Pharo Communications, and we do PR and marketing, and we apply memory techniques to all of our marketing strategies. And that's how we're able to get more people, you know, media bookings and things like that. So it's been a fun life. I've been doing this for a while and we've got kind of these different tiers, but I'll say like the ones at the top, the marketing clients, they do pay the best. But I have to say that the students, especially, I mean, I had some amazing experience. They're the most heartwarming. I had an amazing experience at a college in Georgia. This girl came up to me and she was in tears. Apparently I had visited that college several years in a row and she was in tears. And she said that she was at a point where she was basically pretending. Her grades were sliding. She basically wasn't going to show up the following year. And she was making all sorts of plans with her friends and just planning to ghost them. And it was like breaking her heart and everything. And she had taken my class and learned some strategies for focus techniques and not blanking out. And then she was able to turn it around and she actually graduated with a great GPA and everything. But it was like little stories like that that are just so heartwarming. Like, this is, you know, why I do this, you know?
Yeah, of course. It's always those stories at the end of the day that really make all the difference in the world.
Yeah, my marketing clients don't have nearly as good a satisfying story as that, but they do pay well. So I'll give you that.
They pay the bills. Yeah. So for somebody who's struggling like that, what type of advice would you give them?
Oh, yeah. Well, here's number one. Of course, the belly breathing is very important. That gets you back into, that gets you out of a a blanking frame of mind. There's another strategy that works really well that increases your test scores immediately, and that's just looking up. So we think of, if I say, hey, look up, that sounds like a positive motivating thing, but it's actually a neuroscience principle. Behind your eyeballs is a large bundle of nerves that's like the size of a golf ball right here, called the optic nerve, and each eyeball has them. And what we don't know everything about them, mind you. There's more we don't know about the brain than what we do know. But of what we do know that the optic nerve tends to direct a lot of energy in the brain and help translate our visual signals into imagery. I often say this, that the eyes see, but the brain, sorry, the eyes look, but the brain sees. I ruined it. The eyes look, but the brain sees. And what I mean by that is that your eyes can look at something, but it's really your brain that processes the information. And it actually goes in reverse. When your brain is doing different processing activities, your eyeballs actually move. You guys might be familiar with NLP and how NLP took advantage of this principle. Well, it's much older than that. And one of the oldest things is that when you actually look up, whether it's to the right or the left, you're going to actually tremendously improve your ability to recall information in that moment. In fact, if you're blanking out, pausing, breathing through your stomach, and looking up actually improves your memory between 30 and 50%. So that one hack has changed people's lives. Like students who are failing, what do they tell you to do in the middle of an exam, right? Keep your eyes on your paper, right? Look down, and they train you to look down. They train you to be stressed, by the way, which releases all that chemistry that makes you forgetful. And they train you to look down. What happens when you blank out on something, you hand in the test eventually, have you ever been in this situation? And then you leave the classroom, you walk down the hall for, like 5 feet. And then what happens? Immediately the answer pops into your head. Yeah, you got it. You've been there. Yeah. Oh, I knew the answer to that, right? Well, what are you doing when you're walking down the hall? You're more relaxed and you're looking up. So I just show people, hey, do that while you're still in the exam. If you're ready, to hand it in, pause, deep belly breath for 3 breaths, and look up while you do it and think about the question. And most of the time you'll get that answer. If you have memorized it in some way, and if it's a mental block, there's a difference between memorizing and then blocking memories that already exist. If you are, this was where I struggled when I was a kid, that looking up and belly breathing did a huge difference for me. And that's what kind of hooked me on the idea of brain hacks, that I could think about information differently and dramatically improve my performance.
I'm going to have to use that. I like that. I've heard of the belly breathing. I've never heard of the looking up. That's
yeah. Well, and then also if you're looking down, that's what you do when you're talking to yourself. You ever notice somebody's like depressed or they're talking to themselves and looking down like, oh my God, what I got to do next, and you're just looking down, staring at their shoes. And it's those little habits that we do that have long-term consequences, right?
Yeah.
What's one last one? I mean, the one you just gave of looking up at the right or left is one that all of our entrepreneurs in our audience can utilize really effectively while doing work or on calls or whatever it needs to be. But what's one more hack that our audience could use and grab to enhance their life on a day-to-day basis in that entrepreneurial world?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of great hacks that take a little while to describe, but there's one that's a little quicker. I've got like 50 different ones in my course, and of course we go into speed reading and mental focus and how to get into flow state instantaneously using kind of an interval training for the brain. But let's have a little fun here. There's actually a great hack to tell if somebody's lying. Ever curious about this?
Ooh, yeah. Love it.
Yeah, this is a good one. Yeah, all of a sudden all the women are paying attention, I bet. I want to find out. I'm kidding. Men care just as much. They just don't show it. Okay. So what happens when we're lying? This was actually discovered, like a university tried to figure out if we could tell people were lying. They had this really great study that was organized. They had people drinking out of cups of colored liquid, and one was Kool-Aid and one was vinegar, but they're colored the same. And at random, the person had to like drink one and pretend they liked it, even if it was vinegar. And then to see if somebody could tell if they were lying, nobody could tell after tons and tons of study until they had some law enforcement professionals in there. They had a border guard and they had an FBI agent, and they scored like 99% every single time, just about they could tell who was lying. And the researchers shut down the experiment. I was like, what's your secret? How do you guys know this? And they go, oh, it's called micro expressions. And it originally came from poker, but then law enforcement kind of adopted it. And then, of course, universities studied it and picked it apart. But essentially, after we lie and we know we're lying, so we have a tell and we have a slight expression. It'll be like our eyebrows will move like this, like I'm lying. And their eyebrows will move like that or just a little twitch. I'm kind of not even doing it right because it's hard to fake. You'll notice it when you see it. And people tend to do the same one. Like there's a great, really great example of Bill Clinton on camera where he says, "I did not have sexual relations with that woman." And his eyebrows go right up for a split second afterwards. It's the little guilt in us of like, you believe me, don't you? Like, come on. You know, it's like that little feeling that our brain is trying to do. And if you look for these micro expressions, you can tell if someone's lying. Another couple of hacks for lying are fun ones. If somebody is avoiding the use of personal pronouns, if they're not saying I, if they're saying we, or you know, or you do these sorts of things and everything, generally speaking, it's a good chance that they're trying to be deceptive. And the reason is when we're being deceptive, we're trying to separate ourselves from the situation. There's some great examples when Lance Armstrong was doing interviews about how he was being quizzed when he's tested positive for drugs. And all these sorts of things. He was saying, well, you know, you go into this room and, you know, you just give them a sample and you don't know where it goes. And, you know, they just take it. And so he never said anybody by name and he never said himself by name. He never said I, but when he actually admitted that he took it, he said, I did this and I did that. And, you know, I have to do better and things like that. So if you avoid personal pronouns, and that's because anytime someone's being deceptive, they're trying to push the blame away from themselves. So they'll never say, I wasn't there. They'll say, oh, that thing over there that happened, you know, those people did it, you know, something like that. And it's a really interesting thing. So there's a bunch of little hacks like that. And I think all your entrepreneurs out there, maybe that'll come in handy when they're trying to do deals. You can tell if someone's trying to lie to you.
Yeah, I love that. And, you know, so really at the end of the day, look at their face, find their tell. And yep. Then also, what was the second one?
Well, and also if they're the weird thing is, yeah, if they try to avoid talking about themselves, they're trying to be deceptive, which is really interesting because we're told not to say I, right? So when we hear somebody who says I this and I that, we think that they're braggarts, but the data actually shows when computers analyze thousands of liars versus thousands of stories that we know to be the truth, it's the ones that reference themselves or call people by name that they're much less likely to be lying than if they call people by some nickname or just say them and they try to avoid the use of personal pronouns. So I thought that was fascinating.
Right. So look at their face, find their tell, and pay attention to their language.
Nice. And now everyone's out there is just like, where were you?
Everyone's what are
you
just doing? On high alert.
Yeah. So all the guys are practicing their poker face. I'm kidding. It's funny because it's true. But it's really interesting. It's like people are showing you all the time what they're doing. You know, you can even see their brain processing things. Like, you know, you're talking to them. I was doing a job interview just a little while ago and I asked them different bits of information and you could see the eyes go up when they were kind of thinking of what they were going to say. And then they were going down when they were talking to themselves and you could just see the eyes flipping back and forth. And things like that. And you can see, thankfully, there was no micro expressions. She was very, very honest, very honest person. But if that ever, you know, came up, then I would know that. And it's amazing, these nonverbal cues, so much is said with the body, but we're not listening sometimes, right? So maybe this will help.
Dave, it's so clear. You have what we call an ownership mentality. You went through a really, really difficult childhood experience and not only suffered from it and like you said, became that lesser version of that vision that you saw, but you became so much better and even more than that. And you're now using that experience to live in your passion, live in your flame and help people around you every single day. And this is what we call ownership. So I'm super curious. This is one of the favorite questions that our listeners love to hear is what for you is your definition of ownership?
Well, I got to say, I've studied a lot of philosophy. I'm a big believer in philosophy, everything from Stoicism, Nietzsche, all the way to, you know, Aristotle and Socrates and Taoism and Confucianism. But I have to say the philosopher or the philosophical phrase that has impacted me the most or probably kind of sums up my philosophy in life is the great philosopher Dolly Parton. You know, you're familiar with all her right. work, I'm sure. Yeah.
Incredible.
She said, find out who you are and do it on purpose. And I just think that sums up so much about our life. Don't let your life be an accident. Don't follow other people's ideas and guides. And that's what's really guided me is there were a lot of times where I could have done things other people's way. I might have even, you know, it might have been easier even and tempting and everything. But I'm thankful that I did it, you know, my way. And I, you know, was authentic to what I was trying to accomplish. And I certainly didn't succeed all the time, but the failures, I learned something. And then the successes, I tried to make sure there was a profit in it for me so they can have something in the bank, you know, but really that's really, really the key is find out who you are and do it on purpose. And if so many forces trying to make us be something that we're not, you know, if you're a completely different person than me, that's fine. Be that. You know, be that with all that you are. I don't want to make carbon copies of myself. I want to show people the tricks and techniques that have gotten me some success. And I want to learn from others about what they've figured out too.
Dave, I know you have a best-selling book to be coming out here, coming up. And I'd love to give our audience a way in which they can find you, in which they can stay connected to you, in which they can find more of your content and get access to you so they can have access to this book and ultimately to you as you continue to put out more of this high quality information.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I want everybody to go to pharaohmemory.com. Pharaoh is spelled like my name, F-A-R-R-O-W. It's an arrow with an F basically on it. Yeah, we actually, my son is really good at branding. He just writes the, like, because he doesn't want to spell everything out. He's seven, right? So he writes this the F and he just puts an arrow on it. And I'm like, that's my last name. And I'm like, damn right. We're building a brand here, son. That's how you do it. You know? You go to pharaohmemory.com instead of Pharaoh Communications, pharaohmemory.com and our course there. The Brain Hacker, the book will be out next year, 2022, should be the fall of 2022. And it'll be a big splash. So we should have pre-order copies, you know, available sometime, you know, January, February, maybe March, something like that. But anybody who's a part of my course, you're actually going to get a sneak preview of some of the content just in the course, even as of right now. You're going to see a lot of the hacks and a lot of the content. And then anybody who's a part of the course, as the content gets released, you're going to get sneak previews of all of the new hacks that we have coming out.
Fantastic. So guys, listeners, anybody out there who is watching either on YouTube or through the various podcast channels or on the radio show, this is really what it comes down to. It's not just about hacking your way through and taking these cheat codes to get what you need, but ultimately living in accordance to who you are and truly taking a holistic viewpoint of it and using everything that Dave was talking about to be able to enhance what you do so well naturally. Because when we truly know who we are and we do it on purpose, that is when we get those best results. So as usual, success is different. So be different and own it.